This episode of Murder, Mystery, and Makeup is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on your car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Cars today are built to last, but how they look is up to you, and that's where Maaco comes in. They specialize in cosmetic repairs. Let's say it's affordable paint jobs to fixing those annoying dents and dings. Whatever it is, Maaco has you covered. With more Americans keeping their cars longer, now's the time to protect your investment and keep it looking sharp for years. Get started. Visit your local Maaco today. Get the free estimate and see how easy it is to bring new life to your ride. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
Hi, how are you? Welcome to Monday. We're here. It's another Monday. And guess what? There's only 52 Mondays a year. Can you believe it? I know. I count it. but today's Monday, so... Murder, Mystery, and Makeup Monday, bitches. Okay, listen, if you're new here, hi, my name is Bailey. And on Mondays, I talk about a true crime story that's been heavy on my noggin. And I do my makeup at the same time. Welcome back to the second half of our two-parter on the infamous serial killer, Jack the Ripper. So we've had some time to recover. So I hope you're ready for more. Okay, today's episode... little content warning, lots of blood, lots of literal guts we're talking about. And of course, people are dying. So, disclaimer. So, where we left off. It was about 2.5 months after Jack's murder spree had begun. And so now we are in November of 1888, and Jack has just killed for most likely the fifth and final time. We know that now, but back then, nobody was really quite sure, like, what was going on, and everyone's just kind of waiting around, anticipating if and when he was going to attack again. So everyone's real spooked. Real spooked. The neighborhood where all these murders took place was in a crowded and very poor section of London called Whitechapel. I know it sounds cute. You're like, oh my God, Whitechapel. But people were dying, okay? So it was really hard for investigators to really figure out who was being killed by this person named Jack and who was just being killed because it was a Tuesday, you know? I mean, it was a really confusing time in this small town, but most historians all agree that the murder of Mary Jane Kelly on November 9th, 1888, was Jack the Ripper's final kill. So in the last episode, we had heard about the killings themselves, but now we're going to look a little bit closer at the details and also from like the investigator's perspective. This is when it gets real. This guy was wild. He had no hobbies. He had nothing better to do. I don't know what this person was doing. Anyway, so Mary Jane was the last victim we talked about, and she was the exact type of victim Jack loved to prey on. She was 25 years old. She was an Irish immigrant who had been disowned by her parents. Not sure why, but historians have all agreed that her past was sketchy, whatever that means. And like a lot of the stuff that we do know about her was basically put together by little things that she told people before she had died. But what we do know was that she wasn't really in touch with anyone from her family, and nobody was like looking out for her or keeping up with like her in general. Nothing. Poor thing. So in 1888, she was living in a small room at 13 Miller's Court, which is a boarding house in Whitechapel, and she was living there with her boyfriend. His name was Joseph Barnett. Barnett. One of those. But Joseph had been fired recently from his job. He was working at like the fish market. So Mary Jane, she was like, okay, I have to make some money because you're not. So she ends up going back to working as a sex worker. And it was really the only way to keep them afloat, which circling back to Jack the Ripper, all five of them, they were all sex workers. So like this, again, like fits his profile, I guess you could say. The profile. So her boyfriend, Joseph, now, I guess, look, bills are getting paid, but Joseph isn't really thrilled about her working as a sex worker, which is like, okay, well then get a job, Joseph. Then get a fucking job, because what are you doing? Exactly. So he would kind of give her a hard time, you know? So he wasn't too thrilled. He didn't like sex workers. So then one night in October, Mary Jane, she invited one of her friends to come, like, stay with her and her boyfriend for a bit of time. This friend was also a sex worker. And I guess this was, like, the final straw for Joseph. And it just, like, really set him off. And I guess it led to some kind of brutal fight between the two of them. And then he decided, I'm moving out. Which, good. Move out. You know how it goes, though. You break up, you don't talk to them for a couple days, and then they come back, and you're like, oh my God, I'm over you. And then you get back together and blah, blah, blah. So he would come back and visit Mary Jane a couple times a week. I know, doing what? You know what they were doing. Come on, don't lie. But the weird part was that on the night of Mary Jane's murder, Joseph, the boyfriend, he was spotted at her place around 7 p.m. Now, many have said, yeah, I mean, he's going to visit her or whatever, but was he? Now, the people who spotted him said that it had only been about an hour that they saw him lingering outside the apartment place, but still, it was noted. But later that night, one of Mary Jane's neighbors sees her with a different man. She described him as having a mustache. He was wearing a dark trench coat and also a hat. Now, again, this really doesn't narrow things down for us. It's the 1880s in Whitechapel. What else are they wearing? But still.
This episode of Murder, Mystery, and Makeup is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on your car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Now, Mary Jane's body was eventually discovered by the landlord's assistant who had gone up to her room to collect rent. So they go up there, and I mean, the crime scene is the most brutal one out of all the murders that Jack had left. I mean, it was bad. Real bad. Oh my God, it was bad. I saw pictures, unfortunately. I'm so sorry. It's not that I went seeking for it. It was just like I was down this rabbit hole and it was like, huh? It was like she wasn't even a person anymore. It's just sad. And once thousands of people had gotten word about another murder, a crowd had formed around 13 Miller's Court. Investigators, they ended up boarding up the entire building and the media was just all over it. I bet you he was there too. No, I don't know. This one's a goofer, Jack. Like, he's different, obviously. He's a goof. A goof troop. Goofy goober. So if you remember from last week, or just like 2 seconds ago, you know how the assistant had found Mary dead in a complete bloodbath? Well, he saw that her face was basically gone. No face. And also her organs were all splayed and like neatly laid out next to her. Bitch, let me tell you, because this one's creepy. Because it's so brutal and the fact that it's never solved is quite disturbing. Now here's what the coroner wrote down in his report when he first got to the crime scene. He said first there was just all blood, okay? On the right side of her sheets, they were completely soaked with her blood. And then underneath her bed, there was a massive pool of blood that low-key looked like the size of those, like a plastic kid pool. It's like that size. It was big. I mean, it was a lot. That's what the coroner was trying to get at. A lot. And he noted that a lot of the blood had belonged to the victim, and it was just everywhere. He's like, in his notes, blood everywhere. There was blood splatter on the wall. It was like right by the right side of her bed, okay? Wait, right. So sorry. Right. Blood splatter. And it lined up with Mary Jane's neck, like where she was sliced. Mary Jane's body was fully naked in the middle of the bed. Her shoulders were laid flat, but she was kind of propped up. She was propped up a little bit, like on the left side of the bed, and her head was turned towards the door, and she was laying on her left cheek. I don't want to, you know, just use your imagination. Her arms had hundreds of jagged cuts all over them. Her left arm was laid across her stomach, and her right arm was like resting on the mattress with her elbow bent and her forearm facing the ceiling, okay? And then her hand clenched into a fist. This is a lot. I know. Her thighs were spread apart and her knees were up at like an angle. And the easiest way to describe it is like her legs kind of formed a loose butterfly. Like you do, is that yoga? Oh God, that's such a lame comparison. Sorry. I don't even do yoga. I swam though, so I know the butterfly stroke. Okay. Mary Jane, her stomach was like sliced and flayed open like she was a cadaver in medical school. Her abdomen was just a hollow cavity. I know. I was like, what? This person, Jack the Ripper or whoever the fuck, had removed all of her organs. Her intestines, her stomach, her spleen, her liver, everything was taken out. They were like also like laid neatly next to her body, which is super creepy. Her intestines were like to the right of her. And her spleen was to the left, her liver was between her feet, and her stomach was on the bedside table. Her thighs had been skinned, and then the muscles were removed. Her muscles, they were also on the bedside table, just in case. Also, this killer, the Ripper, cut off both of her boobs, her breasts. One of them was like next to her foot and then the other one was under her head, and it was like making a little pillow for her, which is why her head kind of looked like she was propped up because it was her boob. Jesus. Based off like the reports of the crime scene, it was said, quote, she was hacked beyond recognition, end quote. So, great. So, and that was just the first glance of like what the coroner gathered from the crime scene. Once he got the victim's body and took her back to, you know, the morgue to do an autopsy, that's when he just starts finding more and more and more. Like all around where her neck was hacked, there was massive bruises. Her throat had been slashed so deep that it severed. Oh my God, this part was like, her throat had been slashed so deep that it just went all the way through everything, like her tissues, her vocal cords. It went all the way down to her vertebrae. What that means is this person was fucking brutal. What the fuck? And like almost decapitated. Her face was completely mutilated. I mean, there were like long, deep incisions that ran from her lips down to her chin. And the Ripper had removed parts of her ears, nose, cheeks, and eyebrows. I don't know what he's doing with this. Maybe he's Ed Geining it and he's trying to make a whole costume. Her right thigh was eroded down to the front of her bone. Her left thigh was stripped of skin and muscle all the way down to her knee. And part of her right butt cheek was also cut out. This is Ed Gein. Same family. Her left calf had a long, deep cut that was like nearly down to her ankle. It was so deep that it cut through her skin, tissues, and her deep muscles. Do you understand? Yeah, it's a lot to take in. There was also a small cut on the right of her thumb with blisters. And then there was just more cuts on the back of her hand with the same blisters and just blisters of blood all around it. It was an artificial wound and a lot of people kind of brushed it off. But I think to a lot of people it said like she was trying to fight back and that's why her hand was the way it was. So the Ripper had cut out two perfect circles of her boobs. Like, but like, think about it. It was two perfect circles. It wasn't some janky, like, hack job. It was a perfect circle. Do you understand? He cut out the muscle under them down to the ribs. He then cut her rib cage open and cut through her fourth, fifth, and sixth ribs to expose where her heart and her lung should have been. The left lung was pretty much the only thing really intact, but her heart was gone. What in the tomfoolery is going on? You know, like there's not even a word for how disgusting this is. Right? Or am I? Yeah. Honestly, to me, it sounds like a crime of passion, right? Like, the killer had to know this girl. It's just so intense for someone random. Maybe she, like, denied him or something. Maybe she stole from him. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe something happened. So then the coroner, he opened up the rest of Mary Jane's chest, and he found that her right lung was barely attached to her body. The lower part of the lung was, like, broken and torn away. Her stomach area had been flayed open. Flayed. I hate that word. It's so gross. Flayed. Flayed open from her bottom rib down to her pubic bone. The way he cut her was like three large, formed like a triangle, and then just like opened up the skin flaps. Bitch. Tell me this person didn't know what they were doing though. Exactly. This person knew what they were doing. I still believe it's H.H. Holmes. Like, I really feel like that's the solid answer here. They found partially digested food left like in her stomach. It was fish and potatoes, which is like, okay. And that's really all that was left of her stomach. My thought here was that, like, okay, this person, whoever it is definitely probably selling the intestines and whatnot. Just all the organs, right? But they probably didn't want to, like, take the stomach because it had food in it. I might be on something? Maybe? No? Okay. Because they only found partial amounts of food. So it's like, isn't it kind of weird that they took out? No, I guess it's not that weird. I thought it was weird. Because that means they probably dumped some of the food. I don't know.
This episode of Murder, Mystery, and Makeup is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way. Visit progressive.com to see if you could save on your car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
So the murder of Mary Jane was Mr. Ripper's opus. Not only did he, like, majorly escalate in terms of how brutally he ripped this woman's body completely apart, but it was the number one murder where he had plenty of time. It seems, right? The other four murders were all done on the street, and there was always that chance that someone would, like, stumble onto the scene, right? But this time, he had, like, the entire night in a room all to himself, and he really did the absolute worst with that time. The investigation was not going so well. Scotland Yard is involved since they're basically like the FBI. But crime scene investigation was like non-existent in 1888. Back in these days, they could barely distinguish between human blood and like animal blood. So this is where we're at, okay? And like DNA, not a thing. They could look for hair, semen, spit, and be like, yep, that's it. And then noted. But that's really all they could just do is look at it. Also, no fingerprinting at this time. All of this wouldn't happen until like 1901. So they really had to Scooby-Doo it and just try and figure it out. And unfortunately, this disturbing crime spree took place in their Scooby-Doo era. It's like, damn. So the investigators, they pretty much relied on eyewitness accounts, physical clues that were dropped or placed by the killer, hopefully, and just the very basic profile that they had. So over the two-month killing spree, they had collected a description from eyewitnesses. Jack the Ripper was of medium height and build, with brown hair and a mustache, which is sadly how you would describe most of the men in London at that time. So that's what they got. They did have a hard piece of evidence. Remember the leather apron? They had that. There was an early suspect, and he went by the name John Pizer. And this man, he would approach sex workers pretty often, all while he'd be wearing like a leather apron. And he would threaten to kill the women with a butcher knife if they didn't give him their money. But they did some investigating there, and apparently he was not Jack the Ripper. He had an alibi really early into the investigation, so he ended up being cleared. It was believed that someone just placed that apron there to, you know, frame John, so that clue was unfortunately a dead end. There was other hard evidence that came in. in the form of letters. They received hundreds of letters. Most of them were like useless, like people just writing in to be like, hey, I think I saw him. Good luck. Or people just lying, saying that they were Jack the Ripper and just being annoying. They're just being annoying and bored. There were three letters that Scotland Yard paid attention to. There was the one, it was called Dear Boss. And there was another called Saucy Jack. It was a postcard. We talked about that one in part one, as well as a letter that arrived in mid-October 1888 that historians call the From Hell letter. So the From Hell letter was actually sent to a businessman. His name was George Lusk. And George, he had created his own task force with the local businessmen to help the authorities locate and/or catch this Jack the Ripper guy, which I kind of love because he was like, the police aren't doing it. Let's all try and do it ourselves. You know, he's like, yeah. So he gets all these guys together. They're getting letters and tips and all that hot stuff. And then one day, George receives a letter. This is the From Hell letter. And along with this letter came like a small gift. And he's like, what is this? The gift was half of a human kidney. So this obviously caught some attention. Here's what the letter said. It said, From Hell. Okay, I'm listening. Mr. Lusk, sir, I send you half the kidney I took from one woman, preserved it for you. The other piece I fried and ate it. It was very nice. I may send you the bloody knife that took it out if you only wait a little longer. Signed, Catch Me If You Can, Mr. Lusk. So that was the letter. Sounds like it's from hell. That's what it said. So this letter was actually sent in the height of Jack the Ripper's like murder spree, right after he murdered a woman named Catherine Eddowes, who was his fourth kill that happened in October. So at first, investigators took the letter very seriously. I mean, did Jack the Ripper really send a victim's kidney to this guy George? I mean, right? So Scotland Yard, they end up sending the kidney to the coroner, and the coroner ends up examining it, and he was looking to compare it to the report he had written during Catherine's autopsy, looking for shape, size, anything to confirm that it's a match. But then when he was reading his report, he saw something that kind of humbled him a bit, I guess you could say, because in his report he had noted that Catherine was a heavy drinker, and the kidney that had remained in her body had been in really, really bad shape. And the kidney that had arrived in the mail was actually like really healthy. So because the coroner is one of the smarter people here, the From Hell letter was considered most likely a hoax sent by a medical student, someone who would have access to kidneys. I was thinking, how do we know it wasn't an animal kidney or something like that? Do animals have kidneys? I don't even know. Oh my God. But then I also kind of think that they brushed it off too soon, because how do we know it wasn't just a kidney from somewhere else? I don't know. They should have just went with it. They had nothing else. Jeez. The coroner seemed to think that it was definitely from a human, not from an animal. But even though the From Hell letter was proven to be a really awful prank, everyone agreed that Jack the Ripper probably did have some kind of like medical background, or at least some knowledge of anatomy. They were also thinking it was probably a medical student, but like, what kind of medical student? Well, you never know, bae. You never know. These stories always surprise me. So that's one area that they actually start to really focus on, is the medical professionals. They're like, hey, everyone, investigators, listen up. I've got something to say. They're like, hey, we should maybe ask around and find out like who thinks their doctor is a little off. Good idea. And they do that. They ended up finding several leads. Yeah, a lot of people were like, yeah, my doctor, he's real fucked up. You might want to check him out. Anyways, but one of the earliest suspects was a 27-year-old, and his name was John Saunders. He had been a medical student in London for several years, and he had suffered from a severe mental illness. He would have very violent outbursts, and I guess he would take it out on his family like all the time. They ended up putting him in an asylum on and off throughout his his life, really. He also clearly had a reputation because someone put his name out there as a potential suspect. So this guy is like, oh, okay, something's off with this guy. We need to go investigate. But unfortunately, quickly, investigators had cleared him because he wasn't in Whitechapel at the time of the murders, but was actually in an asylum where he had been since 1887. Bummer. So there was another clue investigators had. It's something the historians called the Gulston Street Graffito. It was after the murder of Catherine Eddowes. A piece of her apron was found in a doorway just like east of the crime scene. And written above it on the wall in chalk was the sentence, "The Jews are the men that will not be blamed for nothing." Yeah, What? But that was written on the wall. Okay, so police, remember from the first one, they end up erasing it. They're like, oh, a clue. Let's get rid of it. They didn't want to intensify a situation. People were already like, episode one, the first one, you remember. What they did get from this one clue was that the word Jews was spelled J-U-W-E-S. And the double negative, not to be blamed for nothing, both implied that the killer maybe wasn't very educated and that he might speak in a dialect like Cockney. Plus, to investigators, the fact that this note, this graffiti thing was left east of the crime scene made them think that perhaps maybe this person lived on the East End. But this kind of conflicts with the idea of him being a doctor, right? So the investigation is just wobbly, right? The police are frustrated. No one knows what's going on still. The commissioner even said, quote, that a crime of this kind should be committed without any clue being supplied by the criminal is unusual. But that five successive murders should be committed without our having the slightest clue of any is extraordinary, if not unique in crime. Something like that. It ended like that. And I agree, sir. I mean, I bet you there was fingerprints and DNA everywhere, but at this time, totally valid, sir. Very difficult. We hear you.
This episode of Murder, Mystery, and Makeup is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on your car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
So after another 6 months and no more, you know, victims seeming to pop up, the investigation just kind of winds down. People are losing interest in the case because it's not being shoved in their faces anymore with the media and everything. And the case technically remained open until 1892, but no movement, nothing. Unfortunately, the case would close in 1892 and the leads were just completely dried up. I mean, there were no more murders, which is good, but doesn't help the investigation at all because there was no more clues. Plus, everyone's clues are just kind of off, it seems like. But it's closed. Yeah, closed. And in Britain, once a case is closed, they seal it for 100 years. What the hell's that about, you guys? And like, you wouldn't think this would happen to such a high profile case with the Jack the Ripper, but since it was unsolved, they chose to seal it. So all of the evidence and files were sealed until the 1970s. I know, but then, But like Scotland Yard decides to open up the case files again, and he opens them up to researchers and historians for the first time ever. Oh, bitch, could you imagine? Being like, it's never been seen before, okay? And then the files became open to the public in 1992, which is a really long time, right? First of all, wow. Second of all, whoa. It's a shame that they do that because now the killer is long gone. So I don't quite understand why they would seal it for so long. Somebody explain to me how that makes sense. Anyways, that's a long time, right? Like, 1992 wasn't even that long ago. Oh my God, it was. Oh my God. Okay. Good to know. So building a psychological profile of Jack the Ripper in 1888 was nearly impossible, right? And a big part of that is because psychology as we know it today wasn't around until after World War I. It's still growing and changing now, right? So at this point in history, if you were acting up in any way, shape, or form, you would be put away in an asylum and given drugs until you calmed down because you were being crazy. People at the time were considered sane or insane. There was no in between or anything like that. They didn't have any of the like forensic psychology tools investigators use nowadays. You know, you get it. Scooby-Doo. They gotta Scooby-Doo this shit. But clearly, still, to this day, I mean, there's a heavy interest in this case. This case has been in a lot of people's mouths for a very long time, probably because of how fucking gross and horrifying and, like, unsolved. I think that's what gets everyone kind of like, what? What happened? I mean, so much so that, like, thousands of miles away and 100 years later, in 1998, the FBI in America actually built a psychological profile of Jack the Ripper. Yeah. And this is what they found. So they ended up doing a victimology analysis, and they looked at Jack the Ripper's type of victim. We know that he targeted sex workers who had been drinking, right? But they analyzed why. And most likely it was because he didn't have to pick a victim. The victims each picked him. They also analyzed his MO. He killed quickly with no sexual assault, then mutilated their bodies after they died, and he would also take trophies like jewelry, organs. That's a trophy. And the FBI agreed that Jack the Ripper definitely had some knowledge of anatomy in some form. They analyzed his crime scenes, and if you draw a location of the five murders on a map, it creates a triangle. What the FBI called a secondary comfort zone. So his primary comfort zone was the location of his first kill, the murder of Marianne Nichols in Bucks Row. And then he moved around outward from there. Interesting. So they claimed that Jack the Ripper most likely lived or worked in Whitechapel, which, by the way, is only one block away from the London Hospital. The FBI, they call Jack the Ripper a lust murderer. Lust doesn't refer to sex in this case, but the style of mutilating his victims, especially around the boob, the uterus, the vaginas. That's what makes him a lust killer. They usually say that lust killers are in their late 20s. So they place Jack the Ripper's age between 28 and 36. The analysis then goes deep into building a profile of what they think like Jack the Ripper's early life was like, claiming that Jack most likely came from a family with a domineering mother and a passive father. His mom was most likely a woman who liked to party, you know, who would drink a lot, flirt with other men, maybe even sleep with them, and his father wouldn't do anything about it. Yeah, I know. This is what they gather just based off of the murders. His mom liked to drink and flirt and like have sex. I'm not saying they're wrong. It's just wild to me. That's all. Okay. Anyways, his father wouldn't do anything. They believe that this killer, Jack the Ripper guy, did not respect his father. So he failed to make any positive adult attachments. And with that, he withdrew and became like antisocial, internalizing his anger. At a young age, most likely started harming animals or like started small fires. They really go off, you know? They really go off. These early acts of violence gave him a sense of control. And as he got older, the fantasies were most likely just growing stronger, you know? Domination, cruelty, mutilation. And who was his main target? Women like his mom. I know. Calm down, Jack. You're a lot. This is a lot, man. There was also a few pitches as to what kind of job Jack the Ripper most likely had. Many assumed a butcher or a mortician's assistant. I was like, that's kind of a good one. Mortician's assistant. Also, a medical examiner's assistant or a hospital attendant. Most likely, this killer worked 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. I know, I'm still shocked that they can gather all this. Yeah, and he likes to eat at McDonald's on Tuesdays. And his favorite letter is P because he thinks it's shaped funny. Also, according to the analysis that this killer had low self-esteem and it might have come out in physical ways. Most likely, like, he was just really bad with women, he had no friends, and he wasn't married. You know? And if he was ever married, they believe that it was most likely with an older woman. A woman of age. A mature woman. The last thing the FBI's analysis digs into is Jack's behavior both before the murders and after the murders. It was believed before he would kill, most likely he would drink. He would do like a pub crawl until at least midnight or later. He wouldn't seek out women. He would most likely wait until he was approached, usually by a sex worker. And he was very familiar with the area, so he felt confident in the spots that he would kill at. And then after the murder, Jack was not the type of person who would have like inserted himself into the investigation. The analysis thinks that all of those letters, including the Dear Boss letter and the Saucy Jack postcard, were most likely fakes because people are just leeches and kind of, people are just lame. People are just lame, you get it. It was believed, though, that whoever did this was most likely coming back to the scene of the crime or even visiting their graves and reliving, quote unquote, reliving the events in his mind. Yeah, he's one of those. Aren't they all kind of like that, though? Just psychotic and like reliving it? They're so weird. Anyways, I think everybody agreed on the point that it was strange that these murders just all of a sudden stopped. That was the part nobody could seem to get their heads around. There are many potential suspects, but I'll talk about like a few of the most popular ones, and then you could just tell me what you think, okay? First up is Francis Tumblety. First of all, great name. Second of all, we don't really know much about Francis other than he was a doctor and a bit of a con man. He made up a lot of fake potions and lotions and doodabs, and they would cure everything. You know these people. He was just making up shit and was like, here, this is gonna cure your bad tooth infection. Later on down the line, he was connected to the death of one of his patients because of what he prescribed them. But he wasn't arrested for it, and he carried on. A fun little side note, I had to add this because I was like, what the fuck is going on? Francis was arrested in connection to the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. I know, I feel like I'm in the Twilight Zone. Like, remember when like family sitcoms would do crossovers and you're like, this is kind of weird. That's what it feels like right now. I mean, apparently he knew one of the men who plotted to kill Abraham Lincoln, but they ended up, something happened, whatever, and they let him go. Now, Francis over here, he apparently hated sex workers, and he was very passionate about this feeling. He also had a very interesting collection of uteruses. Hello? He's like the one that makes sense the most. He also had a ton of anatomical knowledge, and he was in London at the time of the murder. In November of 1888, Francis was arrested for gross indecency and indecent assault with force and arms against four other men. Back in those days, these charges were also used not just for assault and battery, but also as charges for homosexuality. Yeah, horrible. It's unclear whether he had like actually sexually assaulted someone or if he was just targeted for consensual relationships with men. You know, like both were considered illegal at the time. Either way, if this is true, it definitely doesn't fit the profile, right? Police did go and they found him and they questioned him at the time, but he was not considered a really violent guy, which again suggests that the indecent assault was actually for consensual homosexual intercourse, right? But regardless, he was never named a suspect, but he hasn't been ruled out. I mean, right? He has all the talking points. He hits all the beats, but the world will never know. Another suspect we have is Joseph. We talked about him earlier. Joseph Barnett, the last victim, Mary Jane Kelly's boyfriend. So he was initially questioned after her murder, which you would expect would happen, but he was cleared. And then after 1988, when the FBI profile on Jack the Ripper came out, some historians are looking back at him. And for good reason. He fits the profile. 30 years old, description matched of light brown hair and a mustache. And he also lived in Whitechapel all of his life, so he knew the area. His father had died when he was 6, so he kind of ticked off that box of absent father, right? And on top of that, Joseph hated sex workers, and his girlfriend just happened to be one. Was Jack the Ripper a way of him either acting out his anger, his frustration? He wasn't working. Or maybe he was trying to create a situation to scare Mary off from being on the streets, right? But would he go that far? I don't know. But he sounds right. Oh, I didn't even tell you. He was also a fish porter. So he's taking fish right off the boat and like gutting them with a giant hook. Not exactly a doctor, but comfortable with doing shit like that. Throughout his spree, Jack the Ripper was clearly escalating. So it was like, what if Joseph just finally had enough of this whole mess and ended it all by killing the person who was causing him all this pain and frustration? Mary Jane, his girlfriend. It would explain why the murders just only stopped after Mary Jane. Would it though? I don't know. I disagree sometimes with myself. It's like in the moment, I'm like, yeah, this totally makes sense. Yeah, and then when I'm filming, I'm like, well, he ticks all the boxes. I don't want to discredit this guy, but he just gives me the vibe that he probably doesn't really know the body that well, like anatomy, but I mean, it could be right. Another suspect is someone we just did the murder mystery makeup on, H.H. Holmes. So this H.H. Holmes guy, if you don't know, he was going on a crazy killing spree in the United States, and he built this famous murder castle, and like the things he did were pretty brute. And his great-grandson, a man named Jeff Mudgett, he came forward saying, like, I believe that H.H. Holmes was Jack the Ripper. And I was like, yes, tell me more. Go on. What do you say? Holmes was known for leaving a massive paper trail wherever he went in America. But there was a sudden pause in his paper trail during the time he went to visit the UK. Coincidentally, it was around the same time of the Whitechapel murders. Also, physical descriptions, the police sketches of Jack the Ripper looked a hell of a lot like H.H. Holmes. Maybe it's just the mustache. Maybe it's murder, you know? Jeez. It's like, this is the guy. Oh, there's also records of an H. Holmes traveling from the UK to the US in that time period. H.H. Holmes was also a doctor, and he got a thrill from dissecting bodies. He was the guy who had the corpse of a dead baby in his dorm room after taking it home from like work or class, if you remember. So he definitely had medical and anatomical knowledge. Medical and anatomical? Most people believe that the Dear Boss letter was probably a fake, whatever, right? But there's people out there who have studied the letter and believe it was actually written by an American. Yeah, one handwriting expert compared the handwriting of the Dear Boss letter with a note that was like, it had been written by H.H. Holmes and said it was a match. I mean, of course, like we don't know for sure, but like, come on. They even ran it through a computer analysis thing and it came back that there was a 97.5% chance that the writing was done by the same person. See, this is why you shouldn't have to wait 100 years. Because maybe this could have been figured out sooner and then we could have found out. What is the deal with that? People kind of discredit the H.H. Holmes thing because his motivation, he was motivated by money and not necessarily the thrill of killing, but he could have been selling these organs and stuff.
This episode of Murder, Mystery, and Makeup is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way. Visit progressive.com to see if you could save on your car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary, not available in all states or situations.
And then we have another suspect named Aaron Kaminski, who is a Polish Jew who had immigrated to London as a teenager. And at the time of the murders, he was about 23 years old and lived in Whitechapel. He was working on and off as a barber. So apparently this man suffered from a severe mental illness. He also hated sex workers and had strong homicidal tendencies. So he's considered a suspect. And then in March of 1889, he was institutionalized in an asylum. So it's feeling like a pretty strong match to the Jack the Ripper profile, except for the part about him being a barber. And yes, barbers were also surgeons for centuries. They were called barber surgeons, I know. But by the year 1800, they weren't allowed to perform any more surgery. They figured out, like, you can't do that anymore, you guys. You either cut hair or you're a surgeon. You can't be both. I think it's H.H. Holmes, right? Can't we dig his body up, slap it a couple times? And then do they they don't have any evidence from Jack the Ripper, do they? Just all like, yeah, I forgot they were Scooby-Dooing it. God damn it. Aaron is the current front runner for most historians as the identity of Jack the Ripper. Because in 2019, an amazing bit of evidence had come to light. Forensic scientists were actually able to extract a bit of DNA from a shawl that was found on Catherine Edo's body, the woman where the chalk writing evidence was at. And apparently, the DNA closely matched the DNA of a living descendant of Aaron's. Now, I am bamboozled. Now, it's not set in stone. Some critics pointed out that they only tested mitochondrial DNA, the kind that's passed down from the mother and could indicate, like, all kinds of descendants. They also say that the shawl wasn't definitely at the crime scene. And even if it was likely contaminated, you know, because there was, like, a large crowd of spectators. And, yeah. But, anymore, man. So Jack the Ripper, obviously there was going to be some lame-os, some copycatters, and he did have a copycat murderer who, like, tried to follow in his footsteps over 100 years after the Whitechapel murders. I know, what a loser. This guy's name is Derek Brown, and in 2008 he was convicted and sentenced to life in prison for murdering two women in Whitechapel. Both women were sex workers. And undocumented immigrants who sold DVDs on the streets, and they also did drugs, which I only bring up because Derek Brown, he told people that he thought no one would miss them, and that's why he did it. Like, it's yuck. Ugh. Fuck that guy, you know? So police had reason to believe that this guy was trying to mimic Jack the Ripper. I mean, he had gone to his local library, and I guess he had borrowed the book. It's called Killers, the Most Barbaric Murders of Our Time. I'm just thinking, like, shit, if you ever looked at mine, I would be so fucked. I'm like, is that bad? Is that bad that he got that book? Okay, my bad. And he also assembled his own, like, DIY murder kit, which included a bow saw, steam cleaner, and waterproof sheeting. What an idiot. He forgot the gloves. But Derek Brown, he got a few things wrong. First of all, he started out as a serial rapist. He had been convicted of this. And then in 1989... Derek was convicted of rape and given 7 years and is considered the main suspect in a total of 6 different rapes. It's fucking awful. And then from then, this is when he started to escalate to killing. And that's when he decided that he wanted to be like Jack the Ripper. I guess this Derek Brown guy, he had gone up to one of his friends and, like, started bragging about how he wanted to add serial killer to his resume and become famous for it. Wow, what a goal, Derek. Wow, you're so cool, man. Wow. Is that what they want? Like, I don't get it. I guess he murdered and dismembered both of these women, but unlike Jack the Ripper, he disposed of their remains and the bodies were never found. But the judge convicted him anyway. I mean, he said John left plenty of evidence, even though he tried to hide it. The investigators found blood from the women all over Derek's apartment, in his kitchen, hallway, bathroom, you name it. It was there. And then Derek, when he was cleaning up, I guess he had like ripped up his carpet and stripped the walls of the wallpaper because he was trying to hide the fact that there was blood everywhere, but he did a really bad job. Derek was given life in prison in 2008 with possibility of parole after 30 years, but he most likely will die there. But those are like the top people who are considered top suspects. Again, do I need to insert my opinions? Because I feel like you know what I'm going to say. H.H. Holmes all day, baby. And also that Aaron guy. But I don't know. I don't even know how DNA works. I'm not going to try and act like, but they found the DNA. I don't know. But here's what I do know. One, how do we know Jack the Ripper is a man? Two, obviously this person was really great at what they did because it was weird. They got to the point, they got what they wanted, and then they left. Three, I think there was some kind of personal connection to Mary because the fact that she was like brute, like wow, she was barely, you couldn't, you, she, I don't even know what to say because it was that bad. So it's like, I feel like that has to be someone who is passionate about this killing, which makes me think that they probably knew Mary. And then I go back to the boyfriend. But then the boyfriend has a secret knowledge of, like, knowing where all the intestines and everything were. The uterus. The uterus is not that hard. I mean, not that easy to find in the body. Yeah. So, again, then I go back, what if it's a chick? And that's why they were never caught. I'm kidding. Please. All right. Well, look, Jack the Ripper, we can go on and on. We could do part three if we wanted to because there's just so much. It's never ending. It would be wild if they could solve it, whoever they is. But I guess it's just going to be one of those that nobody really knows, huh? And we're going to have to be okay with that. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with me today. I am burnt on Jack the Ripper and H.H. Holmes, bitch. Make good choices, please. And try your best. And I'm proud of you. All right. I'll be seeing you guys later. Bye.